It's the Mayo News Football Podcast. I'm Mike Finnerty and you're welcome along to our New Year special slash review of the year that was 2021. As seen through the lens of Mayo football, of course, the clue is in the title. By some of us who have spent most of the last 12 months following the fortunes of the county football team and charting their ups and downs along the way. So with that in mind, I've drafted in some help to reflect on the highs, the lows, the good, bad and the ugly bits of the last year when it comes to Mayo football. And my thanks to Ed McGrail and Stephen Drake, who have dragged themselves away from the last of the celebrations and the selection box. They are taking a break from Mrs. Brown's boys. And I think there's a Mission Impossible on tonight as well, Drakey. And here you are, back ready to talk Mayo football one last time before the end of the year.
Yeah, Mission Impossible. No. I tell you what I watched the other night. It was I got caught at about 11:30 on Tuesday, and it's not a Christmas movie, but Misery. Do you know that film? Kathy Bates. savage stuff.
The scene. Tricky, had you not put yourself through enough torture this year without sitting down to watch Misery all over again?
Listen, look, it was a fishing movie to finish off 2021.
Ed McGrail, I'm sure like the rest of us, you've ate, you've drank and you've been merry as well. Was your equivalent of watching Misery watching the All-Ireland final maybe one more time, was it?
No, it wasn't. And actually, it's one of the things we said. I remember talking with a gang in Achill after the semi-final that it'll be a great one to watch on Christmas Day. I haven't watched it back, you know, the semi-final, which we were so excited about at the time, its significance seems to have abated hugely. And we're just back actually from a birthday party tonight. My father-in-law's birthday party, 81 years young, a man who talks about nothing but Mayo football. But for some reason, no talk about Mayo football the last few months in these gatherings. It seems to be just a subject that's off limits, which I think is instructive.
Well, I'm really, really glad, Ed, you mentioned that. And that wasn't a pre-rehearsed from the training ground move at all. But it does, I suppose, speak to the fact that we weren't even sure a couple of days ago if we were going to record this podcast, because we weren't really sure if there was an appetite out there among the listeners for one last look at 2021 and a scene set for 2022. Were we going to leave it maybe just to settle? And then along comes Colin Sheridan, and yet again, knocks it out of the park, writes an absolutely brilliant piece for his review of the year for the Mayo News, where we stuck a headline on it, "What's Another Year?" And Colin, in his own inimitable style, was just making the point that from now until the day, basically 2021 for Mayo football fans will always be known as the year we lost another All-Ireland. And no matter what else happened before that or since then, the All-Ireland final defeat is really what's going to define the year. And I think, Ed, it didn't take a whole lot of encouragement then for us to say, he's right, you know, we need to take a look back at this season and see can we make sense of it? And maybe this is a bit optimistic. Can we make sense of the All-Ireland final as well? So do we blame Colin Sheridan for being here on the night before New Year's Eve recording a podcast? I think we are.
Ah, yeah, sure. Why not? You know, we'll throw the blame at Colin's door. But yeah, I think it's, no matter what the future brings, I think we look back on 2021 as one that got away. There'll be a lot of regret. Whether inside the camp, I'm sure there will be. They probably won't be as open about that maybe as those of us on the outside might be. If Mayo go on to win the All-Ireland in the next 2 or 3 years, you know, it will ease it somewhat, but I don't think it'll ever, you know, it won't remove it from the memory bank. And if Mayo don't win an All-Ireland inside, you know, the next 5 to 10 years, this is the one we look back on for this generation of footballers, you know, that have been in an All-Ireland final since 2012. This will be the one that there will be the most regret about. There's no doubt about it.
Drakey, just to pick up on that theme maybe about why the vast majority of people, I think we've all been hanging around with for the last few months, aren't really mad keen to talk about the All-Ireland, aren't really mad keen to relive it all over again. Why do you think this one has hurt so much, or why do you think this one is off limits for so many Mayo people?
I think if you measure it against the previous finals over the last number of years, you know, maybe since James Horne came on board and subsequently Stephen Rochford took over, I think out of all the finals, I think this was the one that Mayo probably underperformed in the most. And I don't think, or underperformed in, probably, Mike, because, you know, you look at the other finals, 12, 13, 16, 17, 20, probably to a lesser extent. Like, you know, there was some exceptional performances across those games against arguably, you know, especially 16, 17, against arguably the greatest team that's ever played the game. And, you know, it was a bounce of a ball here or there. You know, it was heroic, mesmerizing games. And literally you went away from those bitterly disappointed, but you know, you could say with, you know, beyond all shadow of doubt that Mayo couldn't have done any more in terms of leaving everything on the field. And in the main got, you know, a lot of their tactical, you know, the tactical aspects of the game right. I think this time it felt that we were probably outwitted to a certain extent on the line. And I think, you know, off the back of a huge performance against Dublin in the semi-final and to finally beat them, it just felt a bit flat and it didn't reach the heights of the previous game. And now, whether that was, you know, down to the fact that maybe Dublin weren't as strong as they previously were, or the expectation was enormous or whatnot, but, you know, it did get to one or two of the guys to a certain extent. And some of our best performers throughout the year, you know, it's not nice to say, but they probably had their worst games of the year in the final, and that's never a pleasant thing. So I think above all these finals we've been in the last 10 or so years, I think this is probably the one we underperformed in, so to speak. I think all the other finals, I think there was a level of performance, some more so than others, but I think we fell well short of what the team was capable of against Tyrone. And I think we fell short on the line as well, which is also bitterly disappointing.
Ed, what, 3 months down the track now, how do you feel about the defeat to Tyrone? And if you could offer a bit of advice to myself and Drakey and to the listeners, how should we feel about it, do you think?
Oh, so disappointed. So disappointed in terms of the feeling, like Drakey was saying, that Mayo have, by and large, even in defeat, they have always given it their all and they've left it all out in the field. Now, I'm not saying there was a want of effort in the All-Ireland final, but certainly, you know, Mayo didn't leave it all on the field in terms of their performance. And that's something that's, like, it was strange. We didn't really want to say about it in previous finals too much because it sounded like glorious defeat, but there was a pride in those defeats that is not something you can really, you know, if you say too much about it, you're content with losing, you know. You know, but I was reading passages of and Andy's book there where he talks about 2017 and that sense of, and in the podcast with Billy Joe, that they could not have done any more, you know. And so what are the regrets from that final? There's very few, other than you didn't get over the line. Compare that to now and the sense of regret is huge. And I won't tell people how they should feel about it. You know, it's each to their own, but I have certainly, and I think we can all see this, I've never seen such a long, I suppose, sense of depression almost after an All-Ireland final defeat as this one, like 96 possibly. But again, like I was 14 then, like I probably wasn't as plugged in as I would be now. This has been one long winter and we're still in December. Like
we might circle back a little bit to the All-Ireland as well, but I'm a little bit later, but I'm conscious. I mean, there were some great highs as well and highlights over the course of the year. And spoiler alert, Ed, your moment of the year that you've written about in next week's paper you picked out how you felt after the Dublin game. Almost you've paused the season at that point. So you've excluded the what came a few weeks later. But Drakey, like, if you think back to the Dublin game, was that the highlight of the Mayo football season for you? Be it the emotion, the victory, the sort of smash and grab nature of it, the way Mayo came so late, or was there something else competing for that accolade of highlight of the year for you?
Yeah, not necessarily competing. You know, the Dublin game was euphoric in a way. You know, it was one of the few times I've come out of Croke Park nearly with a lump in my throat, because it was just enthralling. It was enthralling. I thought early on we were going to get beaten out the gate. You know, when Dublin started like an express train at half time, I didn't really see a way back for us. And what they pulled out of, you know, out of wherever it came out of in the second half was just nothing short of remarkable. And the game had everything. It had absolutely everything. You know, heroic performances all over the field. I think back to Jermyn's bicycle kick when the Robbie's 45 was dropping short and wide, and Kev Mack got a great score off it. I think you think back to Robbie's 45 to equalise the game and the furore that went on before that. Like, the game had absolutely everything. It was amazing. And the outpouring of emotion afterwards was something I hadn't experienced, you know, following Mayo in a long, long time. You know, against the backdrop of all those previous defeats to Dublin. So that rightly is. But the other one that stood out for me, I have to say, if you take Dublin out of it, I think the second half performance in the Connacht final was absolutely phenomenal. And, you know, the way Mayo just bullied Galway in the second half of that game and literally tore them to shreds. You know, the speed of the play, the skill level. I think some of the younger guys really, you know, grew that day. Like Matty Rowan kicked 1-2 from midfield. He was absolutely phenomenal in that game, and several others as well. So I think that, aside from the Dublin game, that second half performance gave us an indication of the true potential of this Mayo team. And that can be a strong template moving forward as these guys continue to grow.
Ed, you were more or less making the point in that piece you wrote that you were as high as a kite coming out of Croke Park that evening. And that seems to be the way most of us felt after that game. That, as Drakey said, it was like an injection of euphoria into the system. People were high for days after that, weeks. You could say maybe months, arguably, in hindsight.
Yeah, well, and like, you know, there's so many ways of looking back at it now. But from my own personal perspective, I wasn't high because I thought Mayo were definitely going to go and win on All Ireland now. I at that stage, I thought Kerry were going to win the other semi-final. And I said it to a lot of people in advance, before the Oisin Mullen news broke, that whatever chance Mayo had, it would be just like Mayo to beat Dublin and go on and lose the final. But it was just the enjoyment of the game itself, independently of where it was going to go, was what, just the nature of it, like Drakey has mentioned. It was just incredible. And I've never experienced a Mayo game like it. The other, I suppose, great semi-final wins over Dublin in 2006 and 2012, I felt at the time that this year's one was better because of the nature of the game, as, you know, as good as 06 was, and also because of where Dublin were at. Like, you know, you were trying to stop a team winning 7 All-Irelands in a row. But now, looking at it back from, it's third out of three for those victory of those three, you know, because of what happened subsequently, like, you know. So it just shows, you know, I've often kind of theorized in the last few weeks, like, what would have happened if, for instance, Rob Henley had missed that 45 late on, you know, what would the winter be like in Mayo? Or what would have happened if Cullen Basquell had scored that goal after Owen McLaughlin was nailed by John Small? I could only imagine the type of anger in Mayo that winter, but it wouldn't be anger at ourselves. And you, the way I'd surmise it is, I think Mayo overachieved this year by getting to an All-Ireland final and then subsequently underachieved in that All-Ireland final. So, you know, like, to get I wouldn't have seen them going to back-to-back All-Ireland finals at the start of 2020. To do that has been impressive, but to, you know, get themselves in the position they got themselves in for this year's All-Ireland final and not get the job done and to perform so poorly on the day, it's just a huge regret.
Drakey, that point Ed made there, it seems to really divide a lot of people, Mayo people and people outside the county, this idea that they overachieved by getting to the final and then obviously underperformed when they got there. Some people subscribe to that theory, like Ed, and feel that it's bomb-proof, and then other people, you know, dismiss it out of hand. Which camp are you in and why?
I'm in a bit of both, right? So I don't think they underachieved winning the Connacht title, all right? I think Mayo are the best team in the province. I expect them to win a Connacht title. So that part of the season, you know, it went according to plan. That would have been the script as I would have looked at it. They overachieved in beating Dublin because, look, as Ed alluded to, a team going for seven in a row, you know, not arguably, the best football team ever, beat them, you know, only 9 months previously in an Ireland final. Mayo were down in the game, down at halftime, and launched a huge comeback. So overachieved in beating Dublin. Weren't expected to beat Dublin. But looking back on it, this wasn't the 2017 Dublin. Wasn't even the 2020 Dublin. It was a huge achievement and a huge performance and a massive weight lifted. And that was an overachievement. I wouldn't subscribe to a monstrous overachievement. But the final was an under. We fell short, ultimately. We just fell short. And, you know, we have to have a look at, we have to look at the reasons why, that happened. Because we're at this since 1989, Mike, and we can talk about the heroic performances that have been magnificent, but people are just sick of losing, ultimately. And they're sick of, spending the entire winter talking about these games and asking about the what ifs. I'd be sort of in the middle of the road in the camp. I thought there was a level of overachievement at certain points, expectation in terms of Connacht and a big underachievement in the final.
Ed, what about the season overall then, right? If we just work back a little bit, on the face of it, promoted from Division 2 to Division 1, admittedly, again, the standard of opposition, they weren't exactly, a who's who of big hitters as it turned out, but, objective achieved, got promoted back to Division 1, another raft of new players brought in to get game time, to strengthen the squad, to replace the guys who are retiring. As Drakey alluded to, retain the Connacht title by probably playing their best half of football in the second half against Galway. And then the Dublin win that gave us all a new lease of life there for a few weeks after another COVID, a year dominated by COVID for everybody. And they get to a second All-Ireland in 9 months. So, on the face of it, all in all, it's not a bad year's work. But yet, how do you sum up the season overall? How should we box off the season, All-Ireland final defeat notwithstanding?
Well, I think if you look at it in isolation from other seasons, I think you can make very strong arguments for how there was progress and there's a lot to take from it. But I think the reality is you can't separate it from the other years where we've fallen short in All-Ireland finals. And there's a collection of them now, and there's a fatigue in people at this stage that we have been down this road so many times. And, we seem to find different ways to lose them, but we never seem to find the right way to win them. This team is certainly not responsible for, 89 or the 90s or 04 or 06, but in the wider public, sphere, like they kind of merge into one because it's one, part of the one sorrowful story. And so that's what tends to dominate the narrative after this final defeat, is you're not just looking at this season in isolation. You're looking at Mayo getting as much as, and I do feel that they, you know, they overperformed, certainly in the semi-final, getting there and not getting the job done another time is just really great with people. And, you know, they're asking the questions, you know, why are we not doing it? Why are we not winning All-Irelands? Why are we not, what have we... what have we learned? What are we failing to learn? And like, there's so much to that, like, you know, so it's frustrating for people, like, you know, and look, Matthew Rowan made the point to me in an interview, there's nobody more frustrated than the players. And that is absolutely true. Like, you know, nobody gives more of it in a year than players and the management and the backroom team. But their perspective is very different. They have to knuckle down and prepare for next year. But fans are kind of detached from that and are, you know, almost helpless in it. Like, players can actually do things to try and solve this problem, whereas fans are looking on from the outside and just wondering, when is this story ever going to change?
Yeah, one aspect of all of this, Drakey, that really does intrigue me, and I've been following this now for 30 years plus, I suppose, and I've listened to a lot of different managers and players explain why it went wrong and where it went wrong. But you always hear when another season starts or a new season starts, you always hear the same sort of lines along the lines of, you know, it's a new season. We've learnt from the experience. We intend to use that as fuel or whatever it is into the next season. And I'm genuinely curious, what exactly will the Mayo squad, the Mayo management have learned most from the 2021 experience? Matty Ruan said in that piece he did with Ed, they've had their review. So I would imagine they've boxed off 2021. They probably don't intend to talk about it or think about it maybe from here on in. That's what we're here for. So what exactly is the big learning? I mean, you've played in enough teams, you've been in enough dressing rooms. What are the sort of things they're likely to try and bring with them into next season?
Yeah. Well, first of all, like, I really would hope that they wouldn't box it off, you know, Mike, because it's almost like brushing something under the carpet, right? You know, I would look at it, right? So you do a review, you know, whatever that may be. I'm not privy to it. We're not privy to it. But that review will take out certain learnings, right? And if they look at it in the cold light of day objectively, and they're self-critical and it runs along the lines it should run along, you know, they will pull out a lot of things that you know they will not be happy with in that game. Now, you know, parking that then would be ridiculous on that point, because, you know, you will take learnings from that and you will look to basically work on those throughout the entire year, and try then when you get back to that situation not to make those same mistakes again. So this idea of parking things, it doesn't work. So, you know, it's continuous improvement. So, you know, what went wrong in the final? You know, well, we probably played into their hands in terms of our game plan, you know, obviously continuing what we've always done, being a strong running team, building from our half back line, you know, and we ran into an ambush. You know, they flooded the middle third, they cut off our supply lines. They banked on the fact that, you know, if they flooded bodies in there and they left 40 yards in front of their own full back line, our full forward line, that we wouldn't kick the ball. We didn't. There was no plan B in that regard. And then they, you know, then, you know, on their own restarts, then when we had boys caught in those areas, they kicked beyond, you know, that middle third and subsequently created space in front of their own full forward line. And, you know, as a consequence, people like Darren McCurry kicked 1-4, you know, got a pile of space. So ultimately we were beaten tactically, right? And we didn't really have a plan B. And I called out on before this, you know, something as simple as having three or four set plays, envisaging that Tyrone might try and do that. You know, typically Tyrone will try and nullify the opposition's biggest threats. They've always been like that. So, you know, identifying the fact that they will look to pin our runners far out the field, because if they let them get inside their own 45, the danger is that they'll foul or guys will loop off and kick points. So they stopped them out the middle third and they banked on the fact they wouldn't kick it. Now, if we had three or four set plays to launch ball in at that stage and we had Aiden on the edge of the square and we were effective in two or three of those, I guarantee you Tyrone would have had a plan in place to drop one of their sweepers back and possibly a second sweeper back, you know. And you're changing the narrative then. And it didn't look like we had that foresight ultimately. So that was a big disappointment for me, that we had our game plan. We were going to drive that through the entire game and we're not deviating from that at all. And that was it. So I'd hope we look at something like that next year as well. And there's a lot of things you can do there.
Yeah, same question to you, Ed. I mean, from watching a lot of tape and from analysing the performances very closely over the years, and again this year, what are the things that Mayo simply have to learn from the Tyrone experience? And I mean, that if they don't, well, then we're just going to find ourselves back here again. Like, what are the big ones that jump out for you?
I just think as I don't think we're cute enough on the pitch and off the pitch sometimes. I think we're, you know, Tyrone would have been preparing for Mayo and they would have known what Mayo were going to come with. And Mayo came with that. And now I will differ from Stephen in the point of view of Mayo created four goal chances that they should have struck two, if not three, of those. And I think it's a different game. And I do think that comes from Tyrone conceded goal chances against Kerry in the semi-final. There was a weakness in the Tyrone full back line. And I felt Mayo went after that, carrying the ball into the tackle at times and taking that risk. I do think as well, though, Drake is right, that they didn't kick the ball enough in to try and exploit that as well. But I just feel that we can be a bit one-dimensional, a bit easy to figure out. Tyrone's two goals came from set plays, you know, things they would have worked on in the training ground. When do we ever see that happening with Mayo? So you had the ball into the wing for McShane for the goal. Was it Myler that played it in? That was pre-planned. And the kick out from Niall Morgan for the second goal, straight off the training ground as well. You know, and maybe Mayo have scored goals like that in the past that we're not aware of, we're off the training ground, but they don't seem to be, like, you know. And again, I just think, you know, you have to be able to dance a few different ways. And playing Dublin, playing Tyrone, playing Kerry requires, you know, you adapting your approach, tailoring, you know, not necessarily for going your own strengths, but being ready to deal with whatever different, I suppose, strengths and weaknesses that those teams come with. And I just don't feel we're adaptable enough in that regard, and we're not cute enough sometimes to react as the game is going on and see what's happening around us.
Drake, a question just popped into my head there. It's probably been more suitable to ask it if there was a scatter of empty pint glasses on the table, and maybe it was a lot later in the night, but sometimes you have to wonder as well, like, were Mayo just not good enough? You know, if you strip it down to the bare essentials here, were a lot of players or a certain number of players just exposed when Tyrone, you know, went and applied the pressure and went after maybe certain players and maybe really upped the ante, and as Ed said, went to the set plays, we were exposed and we were found out?
Possibly. You know, you measure the two teams up together, you know. How many, you know, you pick a 15 out of the two, how many on the Mayo side, you know, would make it? How many on the Tyrone side would make it? It would be pretty even, like, you know. I think Mayo probably would have more defenders in the team, certainly would have Manny Ruan. And they definitely have a couple of the forwards as well. Probably Tyrone might be slightly top heavy in the forward side of things, but Mayo have, you know, some of the, you know, some of the most accomplished defenders in the country. So I don't necessarily think that they weren't good enough, so to speak. I don't think our game plan was good enough. Ed pointed out, like, you know, that streetwise aspect, that cuteness, having more than one plan, the set play piece. We did create goal chances, and Ed is right. He's 100% right in that. But, like, I find, like, they're very much off the cuff. They're very much deviating from what we're doing, you know. I know the one into Aiden was a fabulous crossfield ball. Was it by Kev Mack? I think possibly
Ryan O'Donoghue.
Again, like, these things are Ryan O'Donoghue. It was, sorry, yeah. These things are, and again, Ryan O'Donoghue. You know, these things are very much more off the cuff. So, like, you know, we're going to be looking at a situation where, you know, we could possibly have a full forward line next year. You know, God willing, Killian gets right. We could have Ryan O'Donoghue, Tommy Conroy, and Killian O'Connor in our full forward line next year, right? Like, that is incredibly exciting. I don't think we've had a full forward line that exciting in all my memory, you know, of watching Mayo. Now, are we going to continue to play the same way, as in, you know, trying to bludgeon teams to death with runners up the field and have those three boys inside scratching their heads wondering why the ball isn't coming into them? Like, we have to get a bit more subtlety and a bit more fluency in the way we attack teams. Because we are starting to produce the firepower. So again, you know, going back to the point about learning and understanding, like, I hope the review was done, and I hope there was very hard questions asked, and I hope it was very much, you know, open and honest and frank. But you can't park it, right? You have to then be in a mode of continuous improvement. Look, I think the future is exceptionally bright. I really do. There's a great bunch of players there. You know, we're starting to produce different types of players that we mightn't necessarily have had before. So we need to learn those lessons, and we need to put them right. Ultimately, you know, we can't keep coming back making the same mistakes over and over and over and over again. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see.
Ed, what about the psychology heading into the new year, do you think? Because, like, this Mayo squad have now lost two All-Irelands in 9 months, and you could make the point that they put themselves in a position to win two in that period of time, but obviously Dublin and Tyrone had other ideas. So I always think back to that interview. I think you were there the same night. It's 10 years ago now when we interviewed Donny Vaughan before an All-Ireland semi-final down in Brafey House, and somebody asked a question about all the previous Mayo defeats in All-Irelands and in Croke Park. And Donny made the point, well, you know, that's got nothing to do with us. We've got no baggage. We're a new group. You know, we're going to make our own history. And that was the case, of course, at the time. But fast forward a few years, and all of a sudden, Donny and that group had baggage going into big games, going into All-Ireland finals. And I just think now of the team that James Horan is building at the moment, and psychologically how they're going to feel about themselves heading into a new season. How do you think they're going to be? You know, it's one thing being ready for the start of the FBD, maybe, or going to Sligo to play Donegal in the first round of the National League, but how will they be when they find themselves in the white heat of Championship, hopefully in June and July in Croke Park, and maybe another All-Ireland semi-final, or maybe even another All-Ireland final against a Dublin or a Kerry or whoever it is?
It's a very good question. And I'm always minded that when you have conversations, be it interviews on the record with intercounty footballers, or even if you're chatting to them, they have a very different outlook on these things than, you know, the ordinary people on the street like ourselves might have. And, you know, I'm sure it's all part of an internal process for how they quantify these things. I do think, like, if you look back to 16 and 17, you know, that group had lost in 12 and 13, and obviously had lost semi-final replays in 14 and 15. I don't think baggage was an issue there. I think that they gave all that they could. I think the more so than the collective defeats, I think the nature of this year's final defeat is one that might just linger and might ask different questions of them psychologically, you know, in the sense that they can look at previous finals and talk about continuous improvement. But they look back on the Tyrone defeat and it asks them different questions about themselves in terms of how they performed and how they underperformed. And they will need to right that wrong themselves in a big game. And that's realistically, you know, in the closing stages of an All-Ireland final. And ultimately, like, the ultimate monkey remains an All-Ireland final itself. They have different questions to answer, I think, in that regard because of the nature of the defeat. So it's going to be fascinating to see how they answer those questions if they get to that stage. You know, sometimes teams, you know, exit early because the questions are too hard for them to answer. But I don't get that sense here. I do think their arc is upward until we see them in, you know, a really meaningful game against top quality opposition. You know, those questions are unanswered, will remain unanswered.
Before we finish up, lads, I want to just talk, I suppose, briefly and set the scene ahead of the new season, ahead of 2022, but just maybe to change up the pace a little for a few minutes. I had a few quick fire questions I was going to throw at each of you, and I'll do my best to throw in my tuppence worth as well. We had this going in the WhatsApp groups earlier on, just to so that I wouldn't be catching ye completely unawares. So, Drakey, I might get you to kick off, and Ed can come in behind you then, and we can try and get into some sort of a rhythm. And these are the kind of things that would definitely be coming up if the pubs were open past 8 o'clock and you had a gang of fans, a gang of Mayo fans, all with strong opinions late in the night. Mayo's MVP, Drakey, in 2021. Mayo's most valuable player from the entire season. Who was it?
Easy. Easiest question in the world. Lee Keegan. Best Mayo player ever seen. Best footballer in Ireland in the last 15 years, in my opinion. He's just unbelievable. He's unbelievable. What do you say about him, Mike? You know, he can do absolutely everything. He can do everything. It's as easy as that. Look, you don't need to explain it. Yeah. Just outstanding.
Well, when Drakey started saying... Yeah, when Drakey started saying easiest question, I was like, oh, Jesus Christ, you better go with Keegan or I'll have explaining to do. But no, absolutely off the same page. I wouldn't say he was at his best up to and including the Connacht final, but in the All-Ireland semi-final and final, I would argue he was the best player in the country in those three games. The Dublin Mayo game, the Tyrone Kerry semi-final and the final itself. He was just at a different level. And you consider, you know, the setbacks he's had from an injury point of view. And Mayo were beaten when I thought they were beaten. And a lot of the players felt like they were beaten when the first goal went in and the second goal went in. He still, more than anyone else, tried to drag Mayo kicking and screaming back into that game. I thought he was just immense in those two games. And he's sensational. He's just such a diamond footballer and the best I've ever seen wear a green and red jersey.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to upset the consensus here. It was Lee for me as well. Two quick things on Lee Keegan. First of all, congratulations to Lee on becoming a dad for the second time. And I'm sure it's been a very different Christmas for Lee to a lot of us. A lot of broken sleep, I would imagine, and early starts and late nights. And also, I won't have time to tell the full length story here. Ed is well aware of it by now, but Lee Keegan, his legendary status was confirmed forevermore less than 48 hours after the All-Ireland final, when he took a break from the post-match post-mortems in Westport to come out and have a chat and take some photographs with Jim Zaldi, who's a big fan of the Mayo News football podcast and a big Mayo fan, full stop, would come over from the States for the game for the weekend. Long story short, didn't get a ticket, didn't get to see the game, was in Westport on the Monday. And when he found out where Lee Keegan was, we escorted Jim to see could we get an audience with Lee Keegan, and he couldn't have been nicer, or he couldn't have been more given of his time. And I know he made a Mayo fan very, very happy. And it would have been the easiest thing in the world for Lee Keegan to to declare himself unavailable or to go missing. And I just thought it was a mark of the man. And I suppose just underlined to all of us what a gentleman he is, apart from anything else. And he more or less confirmed to Jim Zaldi that day, actually, that he was intending to come back again for another season. So, yeah, I suppose I've been sitting on that story ever since. So, Lee, don't let me down now. You got to come back now and play for another season, or else you left me hanging. Drakey, Mayo's most improved player in 2021. Again, just to mix it up, I'll throw my thought in here. I'm going to give Enda Hessian from Gary Moore the nod here. I think if anybody had told me that Enda Hessian was going to come in and make such an impact in such a relatively short space of time at the beginning of the season, I probably wouldn't have believed it. But now, all of a sudden, he's a bona fide senior inter-county footballer. So Enda Hessian for me.
Yeah, Enda was great. And a big plus, and again continues, the strong tradition we have of producing, really, really outstanding halfbacks. So yeah, he was brilliant. I sort of went for two. I couldn't switch them, and the two guys went on and won All Stars. I thought Matty Ruan took his game to a new level this year. He's been sort of moving forward this past number of years, and I've watched him a lot. Obviously, he was on the under-21 team that Mike was in charge of, Mike and John Ginty in 16, and a great player on that team. But he's just improved gradually, and I thought this year, and look, he'll admit probably the final wasn't his best game, but I think up to the final he was absolutely outstanding. And a driving force, a real driving force and a real leader. And the other one was Ryan O'Donoghue, Mike. We've unearthed just an outstanding talent, and his leadership and his ability and his drive and his bravery, just everything you want in a player. And again, look, you can never produce enough good forwards. And this year was a real breakout year for him. It was a breakout year for him at inter-county level, and he continued that on into the club championship, and he was the best player in the club championship in Mayo by a distance, to be quite honest. So yeah, they're my two. I couldn't separate them, and they deservedly both won All-Stars, which is great to see as well.
Ed, have you a few different names to throw into the mix?
Yeah, I would agree with the two lads that Drake has mentioned. I thought they were exceptional. I thought Mayo's three best players were the three that won All-Stars. I thought Matty Ruan was Mayo's best player up to and including the All-Ireland semi-final. And I thought Ryan O'Donoghue, in the absence of Killian O'Connor, really stepped up to the plate in terms of taking on the leadership there. And it's only one part of his game, but his reliability from freeze in pressure situations was immense. And doesn't have the same range as Killian, but I thought even in that we saw how smart he is. Like, he knew exactly when it was on for him and when it wasn't, and he didn't try and force it, and his returns in that regard were excellent. Another guy I'd give a shout out for would be Stephen Cohn. I think he's played, he's been fairly well established in terms of he's been starting a lot of games. But I establish is the wrong word. It never felt like he was a nailed-on starter, I felt, until this year. He was starting games all right, but you always felt, he might have been a game or two away from losing his place. But I feel he's stepped it up to another level this year. I thought he has become so reliable and dependable. He was one of the few performers in the All-Ireland final, one of maybe two or three, if I'm being honest. And I thought he was very good against Dublin and has just, become so dependable and reliable, and sometimes those qualities are understated. But in a Mayo defence where there are so many dynamic forwards or players driving forward, someone like Stephen Cohn, I think, is invaluable, and I think he's stepped his game up to another level.
Yeah, another player I'd actually had jotted down here, and if it sounds like an afterthought, it shouldn't, because this guy, during the course of the season at the time, I remember thinking, God, this guy has, like you said about Ryan O'Donoghue, he's gone to a whole new level. That was Padraig O'Hara. Again, his rate of improvement in 2021 was off the chart. And it kind of brings me into the next heading we were going to chat about, our personal highlights from the season. I suppose a couple spring to mind, but the one I'm going to go for was Padraig O'Hara's sort of, one-man band sort of effort before he eventually keeled over in the dying moments of the Connacht final, wasn't it, against Galway, where if it was moving, he was hitting it or tackling it or driving out with the ball. And, you know, again, we think back to the All-Ireland final, and this is the stuff that really frustrates us lads, and it frustrates everybody, that we have to find out by accident 2 or 3 weeks after the All-Ireland final that the reason Pádraig Ó Thuaidh was taken off against Tyrone was because he'd been injured in the lead-up to the game. He'd aggravated the injury in the warm-up, and he'd actually played with an injury for as long as he could before he was taken off. And of course, everybody then afterwards is wondering, why was Pádraig Ó Thuaidh taken off and you know, throwing their hands up in the air. But that's a by-the-by, really. But my own personal highlight from the season, I'm going to give Pádraig Ó Thuaidh's tour de force, in this case against Galway, but most days he went out, really. The way he just lifted Mayo people and brought them with him on his back. And I think we'll all remember those interviews that he and Lee Keegan did on the side of the pitch as well after the Dublin game, when they got the man of the match for the different TV stations as well. It was a lovely moment, Pádraig's interview. So yeah, either his interview or his performances, you can take your pick. Ed, who would you go for? What was your personal highlight, actually?
Yeah, I was just thinking there. His interview after the Dublin game was something special. And again, I'm putting the asterisk beside the Dublin game. How I felt then and how I feel now are two very different things.
Certainly at the time, Rob Henley's equaliser, just in terms of the drama and the intrigue and the backstory and so much the pressure that was on the kick after missing the first one. And you just felt if Mayo got extra time that Dublin were out on their feet. And, you know, it was so gripping. And, you know, he shanked the first one quite badly, but got another go at it because Stephen Cohen wasn't off the pitch. And I think Maurice Deegan kind of was shouting at him as he was kicking the ball, and went badly wide. And to nail the second one, like I always say, it's a lot harder to kick an equaliser than it is to kick a winner in terms of pressure. And yeah, it was just it was a real memorable moment, and in a game that just had so many of them. But no, that was one that was at the time it was incredibly satisfying. But obviously, like so much of that day, there's an asterisk after now because of the way the final turned out. But yeah, certainly that night, that Saturday night in Dublin, it was something else.
What was your one, Drakey? What was your personal highlight for the year?
Yeah, look, for me, it was when the final whistle went in that game. You know, I've never heard Croke Park make so much noise while it was so empty as such. There was, 24,000 people there. It was like 82,500 people there when the final whistle went. It was like the biggest weight that was on a team's back, or, you know, a people's back, had been lifted. And yeah, I said earlier on, it was pure euphoria, you know. And I'll readily admit that I was crying my eyes out, you know. And it was a long time since I cried in Croke Park, genuinely. It was just brilliant. It was wonderful. And, you know, I think everyone got swept up in the emotion of it. And obviously, you know, out over the tannoy with the green and red and Mayo, stuff like that. It was really, really special moment because the supporters and even the players as well had suffered, you know, an awful lot against that Dublin team, and had lost so many huge games, and I'd been on the wrong side of so many marginal results. So, you know, that just that moment, and then maybe 5 minutes after it, where people, you know, soaked it in and enjoyed it, was really, really special, I have to say. Yeah.
You know, just listening to you talking there, I think it's nearly answering some of our questions, or the philosophical questions we all have about the All-Ireland final. You know, in hindsight, was it always going to be a huge ask for a group of players and a group generally, and a county, I suppose, even, to come back down to earth and then get back up again, considering the euphoria and the high of that win? And as you said, both of you said already, it was more the nature of it and the manner of it as opposed to anything else. I think that such an outpouring of emotion after the game. But yeah, that's maybe a philosophy postgrad or PhD for another day. when we start to talk about disappointments, Ed, there's no point in beating around the bush. I think we're all going to go for the same day anyway. But what was the most disappointing aspect for you of the All-Ireland final defeat when you look back on it, maybe just to, again, to box it off and bury it at this moment?
Look, I suppose I the general disappointment I've conveyed already, but if I was to think about a moment, it's when the first Tyrone goal goes in and it comes, it's their first real attack since Mayo have missed a penalty. Ryan O'Donoghue missed the penalty, and then the ball goes up, Myler floats it in, and Oisin Mullen is front side, and Robbie is coming and gets caught in two minds, and the ball hits the net, and just there and then you're like, oh my god, this is gone. Like, that was the moment where you're just like, yeah, this ain't happening. Like, and it did feel like that when the penalty was missed, but you were still thinking, you never know. Like, I think Mayo might have got a point after that to make it a 1-point game, but the goal goes in and you're like, there's no way back here. And that was, you know, that was the dagger through the heart, really.
Drakey, you're up.
Yeah, look, I should be, yeah, the whole game was the most disappointing aspect of this year. So, you know, you could rattle off, you know, a number of different moments within that were all disappointing. So, I'm going to sort of segue from that. Like, for me, outside of the All-Ireland final, which was desperately disappointing, obviously, and we all know it was, like, Killian's injury for me as well during the year was a huge disappointment. Because, he had just the most spectacular year the year previously. We all know about the semi-final. I thought he was absolutely outstanding in the All-Ireland final. I thought it was his best performance in the All-Ireland final against Dublin in December. You know, it was just brilliant. I was moving so well, and I was so excited about the prospect of him, joining up with sort of Ryan and Tommy and seeing where that could go. So that was a big, big disappointment. But, you know, off the back of that, you know, you've seen some of the younger guys grow. And look, it could be something that, you know, ends up being a positive. You know, he'll get a year to get his body rested. You know, he's been on the go a long time still for someone who's so young. So, you know, it might prolong his career in the long run. You never know. But that one for me, outside of the final, was a very, very disappointing moment, because he's the talisman, he's the captain, he's the leader. He's been the man who's, certainly from a scoring perspective, who's carried me over so long. And to see him injured, yeah, and to see him miss out in the year was bitterly disappointing.
Just a couple of quick ones then before we finish, and we'll go positive. Drakey, you have the microphone there, so I'll let you kick off. We're looking for just a few names here, a couple of names. People love to talk about prospects or project players. So give us your selections for players that you think we might be hearing a lot more about maybe over the next 5 or 6 months, players we haven't maybe heard a whole lot about up to now, or players that you think James Horan intends to give quite a bit of game time to in the months ahead.
Yeah, well, look, just the players I saw in the club, throughout the club championship and watched, some of them I didn't see. It's like, you know, there's probably a lot more out there, but, you know, I'm going on guys I saw and had a good look at. And this is very forward heavy, I have to say, because I do think we have an embarrassment to riches at the back. But there's one or two that will step in, like, from not more. I have Kieran King. I've been very impressed with him. Colin Dempsey. So, again, I point to getting players around that middle third who can kick the ball. He certainly can. Pierce Rutledge with an asterisk. He needs to start eating 2 or 3 chickens a day. But, you know, if he can fill himself out in that regard, I think he brings great energy and a very, very clever player. Ben Mullet, obviously Ryan's in there as well, and Owen. I thought James Kelly had a very, very good year. Unfortunately for James, you know, he'd be challenging for a line where Mayo were at their strongest. Colin Slattery, Gary Moore, Paul Towey, Charlestown's already been there. Jack Kearney was exceptional, great young talent. Our own David McBride in Ballyhadrine has been very unlucky with injury in the past couple of years, but like a Rolls Royce of a defender. And the other ones then, again, 3 other forwards, again, clever, interesting forwards that I think might add a bit, were Justin Healy from Kilcommon, Conor McStay from Ballina, I was really impressed with. And Colin Moran had a really, really good year, especially against Ballina. So they're the ones that that's the ones that came off with off the top of my head.
Ed, I think there might be a bit of overlap. You and Drakey scouting the same players, I think. But away you go.
I think he definitely got the benefit of going first there. I think all right, yeah. I'd agree with a lot of those names. I think Colin Moran's performance I agree Ryan O'Donoghue was the best player in the championship, but I thought Colin Moran's performance in the quarterfinal win over Ballina was the performance of the championship in such miserable conditions in Bacon. And he showed the potential that he has. And again, the type of kicks, the type of points he was able to kick that day for Mayo or for Westport, left and right, we don't see that too often. So he has something that we don't have enough of. And he's had his injury setbacks in the past. But I remember him playing in 2017 in an All-Ireland final, in intermediate final in Croke Park. And I was thinking, this guy is going to be a serious inter-county footballer if things go well for him, you know. But they haven't went well for him now. But I think he's worth putting the time in. I'd agree with a lot of the names mentioned there. I think Justin Healy, like the job Kilmina had to tie him down, and it was obvious that tie him down and you win the game. But sometimes there was three of them around him and he was still winning the ball in that county final. And when we were doing our top 100 club footballers last year, Fintan Ruddy was the Kilcommon judge, and he was singing Justin's praises. He says he's 100% worth a look. And again, these are the gems sometimes you have, you know, in the lower grades that you mightn't get the exposure of senior championship. I'd have a look at Rory Kane from Mayo Gaels. I think he's a really, really good polished defender. And two other guys, I don't think we'd see them necessarily play this year. They're under 20 this year, but I think they're certainly worth getting involved, are Sam Callanan and Bob Toohey. Bob played with the Mitchells B team, but I think he has so much to offer at midfield. And Sam Callanan, again, competing for the half-back line. But, you know, both those lads are still in secondary school, but I think they're worth investing in. And you mightn't reap the benefit in 2022, but I think you will down the line.
Yeah, Sam Callanan and Bob Toohey, two lads I saw playing colleges football only in the last few weeks. They're still in school. They're in St. Murdoch in Sam's case and St. Gerald's in Bob's case. But I think you're right. They're on the radar. They're inside the fold at the moment, and I think they're two lads who might be back in the Connacht Aerodrome in the next few weeks. I gather playing in the FBD League as well. Yeah, for me, you've covered a lot of the same players I would have had in my head. But Jack Coyne from Ballyhaunis is a guy that I was really impressed with in the county intermediate final. He's cut from the same cloth as Keith Higgins, you know, very polished, pacey, and a guy who's been knocking around the panel for the last couple of years, along with the likes of Rory Brickenden. So I think they're two lads that are going to get their game time in the months ahead. Just to finish up, then. I suppose I'm asking this one out of divilment as much as Anton. Drakey, will Oisín Mullen play for Mayo in 2022? What's your gut feeling?
Why not? Like, you know, by all accounts, there's been a lot of to and fro in relation to this. So it certainly doesn't seem to be concrete at this point. So look, I'd say get a benefactor or something to sign a check for him, whatever the amount is, because really, you know, you build a team around Oisín. So when you look at what we produced over the last number of years, you talk about Keith Higgins, you know, Colin Boyle, Lee Keegan, you know, outstanding defenders, generational defenders. Oisín is the next generational defender. Both in Mayo and I think Ireland as well. So, look, it would be a huge boost to the county if we could retain his services. It really, really would, because he's a future Mayo captain. We all know how good he is. So, look, yeah, hopefully with a bit of luck, and it would be a massive boost if he would. And yeah, I'd stick my neck on the line and say he'd be playing for Mayo next year.
Ed, I know you've been following this intriguing drama as close as any of us. There's not a whole lot being said. So what's your gut feeling? The next time we see Oisín, will he be wearing a Geelong Cats jersey or a Mayo jersey, do you think? In January, basically.
Yeah, I think it'll be a Mayo jersey, but the last 2 weeks can't have been easy for him. And I think he's been he's been catapulted into a situation. I think somebody jumped the gun here, and it has made a difficult decision a lot harder for him. But yeah, I think the whispers were here and seemed to be indicating that way. But, you know, funnily enough, everyone has gone to ground, and maybe this is one of those times where Mayo's policy of anything but glasnost is paying dividends, because very hard to get information off them all year. And so maybe at times like this, you know, they can say they've gone to ground, because that's where they are pretty much all the time. And I would take major exception with that all the time. But it is probably helping them in this, in the sense that nobody can get an official line on it, or even a semi-official line or a steer on it. It's very strange, you know. It's such, and maybe it's because of the fallout of the All-Ireland final, but it's such a huge decision for Mayo football. But yet it hasn't commanded the talk it should. And maybe that's because of the depression that's still there in the county. You know, but it's a peculiar one on that level. But no, I think, and I think he'd be playing for Mayo, but fundamentally and absolutely Mayo should do everything they can to get him to stay. But fundamentally, he has to be happy with his decision. And it's a tricky spot for a 21-year-old to be in, like, you know. And, you know, it's a tricky decision to make at the best of times, but to make whilst the whole country is aware you're contemplating this decision, it can't be simple.
Yeah, well, we've said this before on the podcast, whatever Roisin decides, the best of luck to him. He's got his whole life ahead of him. And, yeah, if he decides to go to Australia, I know he'll be a great success. And if he decides to stay in Mayo, we'll be delighted with that decision as well. But I would confidently predict if he does decide to stay in Mayo, you will hear about it and you will read about it. And Mayo will be singing from the rooftops about it, and rightly so. So we will be watching this space. We'll be watching this space. So last question then, lads, and in the spirit of fantasy football, and we're sitting here waiting for New Year's Eve to draw in, and we still don't know what we'll be doing probably on New Year's Eve. Not a lot. But I'm going to ask you anyway, is 2022 going to be the year, Stephen? Is there any reason why Mayo can't go and win an All-Ireland in 2022? Or do we need to just call this now and say, look, it's not going to happen? Or what? Where are we at right now? With the season stretching out in front of us, we'll have All-Ireland champions crowned before the end of July.
Yes, they can, right? There's no question about it. They've got to the last two All-Ireland finals. Their age profile is excellent. Their younger players are getting better all the time. We're strengthening in areas where we need to strengthen. We have Killian, hopefully, to come back, possibly retaining Oisin. And he had injured Tobias last year as well, so probably didn't, you know, get certainly the most out of him maybe in the final. So, yes, they absolutely can, right? But, you know, do I think they'll win the All-Ireland? I don't know, to be quite honest. I think Kerry will be exceptionally strong next year. I think, you know, there's huge scrutiny on them and pressure on them to deliver. Huge scrutiny on Jack O'Connor to deliver. But I think the players they have, if they can get it right, they would be difficult to stop. So look, can they win the All-Ireland? Yes. Will they? If you're asking me to pick someone, I wouldn't pick them. You know, I would probably pick Kerry next year. But they certainly can do it. They're certainly there, thereabouts. And, you know, I hope to God they do, you know. And if we can continue on the trajectory we're going and get guys back, and refine our game plan, I think we put ourselves in a position where we can really challenge.
What do you think, Ed? Is the glass half empty or half full?
It's half empty. I have to admit, like, it's you know, I'm hoping that the you know, the FBD and the league games will spark the enthusiasm, but I'm just not feeling it just yet now, personally. But in terms of 2022, yeah. You cannot rule it out, and you would have to think that there is room for improvement in terms of the age profile of the group and the level of improvement we've seen in a lot of the younger players over the last few years, the last couple of years. So you've that on one side, and then you're trying to project that against, you know, where are the other teams going to be at? Are Kerry going to be better? Are they going to be harder to beat? Is Paddy Cally going to, you know, completely reinvent them? And is that going to be a success? Are Tyrone going to, you know, with the All-Ireland in the bag, are they going to just sail off into the distance happy with that All-Ireland? Or are they going to find another level themselves? And Dublin, like, where are Dublin at in 2022? They look physically and mentally spent against Mayo. You know, is there a kick in them? How do Mayo fare out if they play a Dublin in 2022? So there's a lot of unknowns. But yeah, like if you put a gun to my head and ask me, will Mayo be All Ireland champions this year? I'd be leaning towards no, but you can never say never. Like,
lads, in summary, I'm glad we did the podcast. I know it was hanging in doubt there all week long. Will we? Won't we? Will there be an appetite for it? Yeah, I think we've more or less finished where we started. That it's been a strange year in every sense, but we certainly had another roller coaster ride following Mayo. And I'm with Ed here. It's hard right now to get excited about the Friday the 7th of January, the Connacht Air Dome, the first round of the FBD League from a Mayo point of view. But you wait, Ed. You wait and see the first round of the league against Donegal in Sligo at the end of January. And then all of a sudden, the prospect of a couple of road trips to play some of the big guns, the heavy hitters, and all of a sudden the championship, which I think if anybody has missed it, because during the Christmas, we miss more than we probably pick up. The 24th of April, if memory serves me correct, Mayo Galway in the Connacht Championship. It's down for Castlebar. So I'd say the lads working on the resurfacing of the pitch, I have a feeling they'll be back hard at it on New Year's Day, trying to get the pitch ready for the 24th of April. Because I was at a county board meeting there a few weeks ago, and the 1st of May was given as the date when the ribbon wouldn't be cut and everyone would be allowed back in. So lads, I hope you got the memo. It's all leave cancelled, I'd imagine, for the next few months.
But they don't spare any spending when it comes to McHale Park, Mike. We know that.
Yeah, exactly. So, the best of luck to you, lads. I hope you get the weather that you expect and you need to get the pitch done, because, yeah, Mayo Galway and Castlebar, that's a very different story to Mayo Galway anywhere else. So that's the date for your diary, 24th of April. So all that's left, lads, at this stage is to say season's greetings and Happy New Year to you and yours. We'll raise a glass to the Mayo News Football Podcast tomorrow night, I'm sure, where we are in our homes all across the country. Drakey, you've just put down your first year as a married man, so you've got plenty to toast, plenty to celebrate. If you're allowed to record a podcast with us late at night and the last week of December, you must be doing something right.
My wife loves this podcast. She gets the TV for a couple of hours. She doesn't have to listen to me whinge and moan. It's the best day of the week for her. It's the best few hours of the week for her. No, she's a saint, fair play to her. So, I'll certainly be toasting the podcast tomorrow night with a nice glass of Rioja. So, love it. Yeah, been a great year and really enjoyable to do it as well.
Well, look, lads, it wouldn't be the same without you. And my thanks to everyone who took part in the podcast this year, who contributed, who listened, who got in touch, who entered competitions. We've had great crack doing it. And the good news is we're going to be back doing it all over again in 2022. And also, in case I forget him, the hardest working man in showbiz, Jura Duffy, the producer of the podcast, who's working so hard in the background to make sure that we behave and you get to enjoy the experience as much as we do when you listen. And on that note, I must thank all the lads at Zoom as well for coming to the rescue tonight when our first app crashed spectacularly a little bit earlier on. Jura Duffy, the MacGyver of the operation, wasn't long coming up with a plan B, and we got the job done because, as everyone knows, the show must go on. So look, Happy New Year to you all. Enjoy your football, and we'll be back to talk to you again very, very soon. And who knows, maybe 2022 will be that year. Talk to you soon.